It is 25 and a half minutes after the hour, that being 9 o'clock in the morning here on the first full day of spring on Broken Road Radio. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist. We're going to put your biochemistry expertise to work here. We're dealing with the icons of evolution this morning, and that what that is are things that evolutionists cling to as evidence that evolution is the actual path that we have followed as human beings, from primal sludge to somebody who writes symphonies and paints paintings and develops technology and communicates around the world. If I were to say to you that science has demonstrated conclusively with DNA, mind you, when I say DNA, that's about as authoritative as you can get. There's a 1% difference. We came from chimps. How would you respond?
I would respond in a number of ways. One, that original study that said that chimps, for example, were 98, our DNA were similar to between 98 and 99%. Was a flawed experiment, because at that time they only knew a couple of I wouldn't say a couple, but they only knew the DNA sequence of several of the chimp proteins, and so they compared that with similar DNA sequence from the human genome, and found out that, voila, you know, 98 to 99% were similar. But it didn't account for anything, the non-coding DNA, and it certainly wasn't the complete genome of the chimpanzee. So people have gone back and said, okay, well, we're going to look at the human genome compared to the chimp genome, and the genome means it's the whole DNA sequence, and lo and behold, that number dropped, not unexpectedly, but it dropped to about 84%, and depending on how you do the comparison, and depending on, you know, first of all, the chimpanzee genome was based on the human genome. So when you do the DNA analysis, they use the human genome as the framework. And so when you break up the DNA into pieces and then you got to figure out what goes where, they would need something to compare it to. And guess what they compared it to? They compared it to the humans. So even doing that, you know, you have to guess at some of the missing pieces, and they would fill in those missing pieces with the human part of the DNA. So, of course, you're going to get, you know, greater similarity if you do that versus kind of an a priori thing. You just redo the chimp genome, not using anything as a skeletal, you know, basis.
They didn't have that technology then, so it sounds like what they did is they took a very rudimentary understanding of DNA early after the discovery of what DNA is and what it does, and they jumped to some conclusions to support their premise, which pre-existed that somehow we were, because you have two arms and two legs and a head and kind of walk upright, that we must be related. That seems to be a great leap. I mean, considering there are other logical explanations for that, like design, for example.
Well, yeah, they completely ignored the design, because the whole premise is that we evolved. Everything on this planet evolved from the primordial soup, and even though that has been now pretty much debunked by biology, we know enough about biology to know that, hey, you know, biological life is very complex, and we're just starting to scratch the surface. And one of the things that, we don't know, and I'm sure they've now that we've got a full human genome kind of mapped out, we know more about it than when I was going to school several years ago, is the non-coding sections of the DNA. In the non-coding sections are involved with the stability of the DNA, for example, the way it folds, and involved with the control, all the control mechanisms as to which genes get turned on and when they get turned on.
Now, is this the portion of the DNA they used to refer to as junk DNA because they saw no purpose?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they didn't know what it what its function was. It didn't code for a protein or an enzyme or something useful that the cell uses, for example, like scaffolding in a cell or binding proteins and those types of things. It was just regions within the DNA that didn't code for something. And so the more we looked at it, however, the more we found out that there's a start sequence to these things. There is binding areas in the junk, so-called junk DNA, or now they're calling them non-coding areas, that either turn on or turn off a gene. And so it's a highly controlled mechanism, and the humans have a lot more of this non-coding DNA than the chimp does. So which would tell me that there's much more control to what genes get turned on and off for our DNA than for
Does that account for things like increased levels of creativity, understanding, imagination than a chimp would have? I mean, is there some connection between the qualitative difference in life from human to chimp? Is that the section of DNA that really assures that for us?
Well, you get at the heart of the matter. And the answer to that is probably not. So what's the difference, from a biological point of view? What is the difference between a human and a chimp? And you can't explain it based on our bodies. So if you're just looking at our body, biological differences, for example, you're going to find some. The human brain's a little more complex, it'd probably get more storage capacity than a chimpanzee brain, but we both have five fingers, and we have toes, and we've got, biologically, we look the same or similar. Chimp is a little hairier, of course, than we are typically. But what is the main difference between the two? And the main difference between the two is that we can ask the question, are we similar to a chimpanzee or are we not? And a chimp cannot. So why can we reason and a chimp doesn't appear to be able to reason? Now, last time we talked about, chimps or macaques in Thailand, for example.
There's a breed of monkey,
used rocks as tools, which look like tools, to crack open oyster shells. And it appears that they came across this kind of experimentally, if you will. It wasn't by design necessarily. It was just trial and error. If they used a rounded stone and cracked an oyster, all the meat inside would be smashed. So they found out that pointed stones would open up the shell without destroying the meat inside, and so they chose those. And that behavior is passed down from generation to generation. It's an observable behavior. So younger chimps watch the older chimps doing this, and they pick up stones, and they kind of almost rediscover some of the same things.
What I'm hearing is this is learned behavior based on observation, not something that's coded into the DNA.
Right, and we know that chimps can learn various things. Chimps, we can communicate. After spending years and years and years in training a chimpanzee to respond to different stimuli, we can, you know, have a very primitive communication with them. Now, we have obviously the ability to communicate, you know, quite well. And so, which is, you know, and we would call that a form of intelligence. But to be able to reason and to be able to ask questions is not an ability that a chimpanzee has, and or any other animal for that matter. And you got to ask the question, okay, why is that? Is it just our physical bodies and mind? Is it just, you know, is the mind different, or is there something else? And we don't get the answer from science, because science can't address it. Science doesn't address the third dimension, if you will, of man. You know, the Bible, I did a Bible study yesterday of Genesis 1 with our men's group at the church, and the Genesis 1 answers the question, you know, what's the difference? And the difference, you know, being is that, you know, plants have a body, but they don't have a soul, because there's no emotion in a plant that we can discern, obviously. The animals have movement, and you know, interacting with a chimpanzee or with a dog or with a cat or with you know, some animals, it looks like they have some type of emotional response, and so they have a soul, what we would call a soul. Now, their soul probably isn't the same as our soul. But we have something different. I mean, we have something in addition to a body, obviously, you know, which is our bones, our muscles and the sinews and our intestines and eyes and all that other stuff. The physical part of us, even the brain would be considered the physical part of us. The soul would be our mind, you know, and emotions, that part of us. And then we have a third part, which is called the spirit. And with the, if you go back in Genesis chapter 1, you learn that everywhere it says, and God said. So God said, you know, on the first day, God said, let there be light, and there was light. And then he separated the light from the darkness. And he said, God said, let there be an expanse between the waters from above and below. And there was an expanse. So everything, everything, you know, God said, in, you know, God said, let the oceans teem with fish and various animal life and birds in the sky on the fifth day, and then on the sixth day, all the land creatures were created. But when it came to man, at the end of chapters one. He said, let us. All up until this time, it was God said. And you're left with the question, who was this God who said, you know, who spoke things into existence? And you can, you know, postulate, okay, well, it had to be the Godhead that was creating everything. But from the very fact, well, there's a couple of reasons why that isn't the case. By the very fact that it's explicit and said, let us make man in our own image. So, one, who's the us? Mm-hmm. You know, and the answer to the question is the Godhead. The complete Godhead made us. It wasn't just one of the persons in the Godhead that made us. It was the complete Godhead. And then secondly, we are made in his image. So we've got characteristics that are godlike, not that we are little gods by any means, because that mistake has been made over and over and over again, and even continues to be made for those that don't even believe in a creator. They think they're gods because of their abilities. But one of the characteristics that we have is our creativity. And so part of the creativity and the acquisitiveness, for example, goes into asking this question, are we similar to chimps? And of course, the answer is, well, yeah, we're similar in some respects to chimps. But in this area of the spirit, we are completely different. And in this area of having the capability of interacting with our creator, which the chimps have absolutely no ability to do, is what makes us unique and different than, you know, the animal life here on Earth. And so God created us to have a relationship with him. We learn this, more in chapter 2 of Genesis, that he created us for a relationship. He created us for relationships. That's why he created us male and female, to have a relationship with another human being, for example. And so we're all about relationships. And of course, you can look at chimps and they have communities, and apes have communities, and other animals have communities and pack around together. But it's not this type of relationship that God wants. So, I mean, that God wants with us, for example. And our relationship with him, he made us with the spirit for the sole purpose of being able to communicate with us. Now, in the beginning, when God put us in the garden, for example, he visited us in the cool of the evening. That's according to the Bible. I mean, that's biblical history, if you will. It's not a fantasy. It is what God did with Adam and Eve, before they fell and they were cast out of the garden. And so we're all about, relationships with our creator. The chimp doesn't have that ability. And so that brings us then to, what about the Neanderthal? Isn't the Neanderthal like a pre-human? They looked like monkeys or apes. Oftentimes we depict them with more hair than they obviously probably had, but that is more of man's doing rather than what the actual fact was. Because is Neanderthal a different species of human? Or,
oh, wait a second! I remember
human?
A picture in textbooks. Growing up in biology, there was a textbook and it had a picture of a chimpanzee on the left, and then there was an early caveman, and then there was like maybe a Neanderthal, but they kept getting taller and less stooped over until finally modern man walked off the right side of the page. As far as I know, that's still in the books. What's wrong with that picture? That's an icon.
Everything.
Of evolution, yeah.
Yes. You go to natural history museums, you'll find that. You go to some of the, some of our, unfortunately, biological textbooks, you'll find that. But it is a farce. There is, the only evidence that we have is similarities in structure. And, with this article about the DNA, our DNA is similar to a chimp. Well, 60% of our DNA is similar to a banana. But you don't hear anybody say, oh, we obviously, our great-great ancestor must have been a banana. And it fell from the tree. And obviously, the chimp ate it. And so, that's how we evolved.
It's amazing how just a graphic representation of four or five different creatures placed that way is such a strong suggestion or a command to believe that there was relationship between the two, that one changed into the next, when that's patently absurd and not true and not provable by science.
It's not, not at all. And they've looked for transitional forms and cannot find them. Even Lucy, which looked like had some human characteristics, Turned out not to be the case. She turned out to be a monkey. And so the conclusion of all of that was that humans were eating monkeys. And there just happened to be a bunch of monkey bones around and scattered all over the place. And then the archaeologist who first claimed to discover Lucy, didn't even get the bones from the same location. They were scattered all about. So we have this urge, at least man has this urge of trying, and it is an innate question that we all have. Where did we come from? And so if you don't want to believe in God, your answer is going to be, obviously, we evolved. We evolved from the animals that we see around us. And so it didn't necessarily require a creator. But even if you look at the similarities in structure, and now, of course, we have the ability to look at DNA, and we have the ability to sequence proteins, and we find out that, the DNA structure is similar, the protein structure is similar, especially the more critical proteins are almost identical between different species or different animals, for example, and humans. And we come to the conclusion, you see, that's proof of evolution. And that's a bottom-up type of approach, but a top-down approach it would say that, no, it's a proof of a designer. You know, a designer, an intelligent, I mean, even engineers. So engineers come up with a solution for a particular engineering problem. And it might be, for whatever. It might be for a vehicle, might be for a crane, it might be for whatever. And that solution happens to be a very elegant solution. And so you'll find that solution then being repeated in the different types of mechanical structures because it works and it's efficient. And so instead of reinventing or redesigning that particular part, you see it used over and over again. And the most simplest, of course, is the wheel. I mean, the wheel works, right? And, it's easier to push a vehicle with wheels than it is if the wheels were square.
So it took me a while to learn that, but yeah, I did learn that eventually. In this article
from...
If
you have a flat tire, you learn quickly that a flat tire on a vehicle is hard to push.
The article on Neanderthals involves a fairly recent discovery, scientific proof that Neanderthals ate crabs. And the article maintains it's another nail in the coffin for primitive cave dweller stereotypes. Now, there's more to the story because, of course, they served those crabs on a fine linguine with a parsley garnish and a Sauvignon Blanc to go with it. So the point being, I'm exaggerating there, that Neanderthals were just human. That's all. They liked crabs, and they hunted them in parties, and they cooked them, and they consumed them. This kind of takes them somehow in the mind of some folks out of the category of primitive and just simply makes them human, which is the case.
Yeah, exactly. It's the case. So this study that was done, of course, obviously of crab shells, and they did find that, the crab shells are burnt. Like these crabs were roasted. And it looks like there's evidence of some type of herb mixed in with the crab. So now you got cooking the crabs. So they didn't just rip the crabs apart and eat the meat. They're meticulously cooking them at a specific temperature, which is like in the article, it says 300 to 500 degrees, which is, if we were to cook something, it would typically be at that temperature. Lo and behold, the Neanderthal had sophisticated capabilities and obviously taste buds, and they were eating the crabs for their taste. And preparing nice meals with them. So it takes them out of the realm of we're just doing this because, oh, we need to eat something and we're going to eat these things raw. No, these things were actually cooked at a specific temperature with herbs, it appears. And it's very purposeful type of behavior, which, of course, would point to Neanderthals being indeed human.
And I would kind of presume that after eating bushes all day, a nice crab bake would have really been appealing to them at the end of the day. So, hey, I know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Don is a member of the board at Creation Moments. I want to mention their website to you, creationmoments.com. There you'll find a pretty nifty library of articles and podcasts and audio programs and even some videos, I believe, that support the biblical story of creation with scientific information. It'd be a good place to check out. You can link there from our podcast page, creationmoments.com. Don, thank you very much. We learned something else today. And icons of evolution are falling one at a time, and sooner or later they'll all come to your door and say you were right. You know, we've got to scrap this.
Well, the thing that prevents people, you know, from believing that there is a God is because they don't want to. And because if there is a God, they'll have to be accountable.
Yep. And they will no longer be the top of the food chain.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Don, thanks very much. We'll talk with you in a week. And stay healthy, have fun, and well, be well and do good. Okay?
Bye-bye. All right. You too. So long.